It's the Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 154. I am your host, Adam Mangum. First up is Spencer Linton of the BYU Sports Nation BYU radio show. He comes on to talk about Texas and how awesome it really was, and also what we can expect this week against Houston. Matt and I also talk about the fallout from Texas, including how high expectations really are among the fans, and whether that's good or not. We also talk about the playoff picture for the first college football playoff, and whether BYU might play spoiler in 2014. Again, this is the Rise and Shout Podcast. Check us out on iTunes. Check us out at loyalcougars.com. Follow us on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout. And, well, listen to us right now. Welcoming to the Rise and Shout podcast, we have a first-time guest, Spencer, and I guess it depends on what state you're in, Spencer, how you say your last name. I believe in Utah it would be Linton.
That is correct.
Is that how you pronounce it?
I pronounce it Linton, and only because I grew up in a city named Clinton. So I'm actually Spencer Linton from Clinton, and my dad harped on us all the time to make sure the P was enunciated correctly.
Well, that's pretty cute. Spencer Linton from Clinton. Is that Clinton, Utah?
That is Clinton, Utah.
Did they say Clinton, Utah in Clinton, or did they say Clinton?
I think we were the only ones that said Clinton.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. So, Spencer, you are the host or co-host of BYU Sports Nation, excellent daily radio / TV / podcast show. And you're also partnered with Jerem Jordan, who's been on the podcast before. So there's only one question, though, that everyone has about you and Spencer, and about you and Jerem, and I'm going to bring it up from a tweet bag question. Justin Sweeney, that's at Justin D. Sweeney on Twitter, says, glad to see my recommendation over Jerem pull through. He's been asking to have you over Jerem, which actually he's not the only one. Let's be honest. But he says, how do you come up with the goofy line about Jerem's random characteristic? Actually, he said Jerome, but I'm editing here. His random characteristic every show. So for those of our listeners that don't listen to BYU Sports Nation, you should. But if you don't, at the beginning of every show that you two co-host together, like today, we're recording Monday night, I believe it was Jerem Jordan, the next Pink Panther.
Yeah,
was so. How do you, Spencer? How do you come up with those? You're doing five shows a week now. I know that Brian Logan co-hosts sometimes, but how do you come up with those?
You know, sometimes it's just nonsense. Today was one of those nonsense days. I was like, okay, what's the first thing that comes to my mind? Pink Panther. Awesome. We're gonna go with Pink Panther. And I'll come up with those sometimes like 2 minutes before the show starts, because it's usually the last thing that I prepare. Ironically, it's like the first thing that I say when I introduce Jerem. But it's the last thing that I prepare on a daily basis. And sometimes conversation will give way to something silly or dumb that Jerem has done or said or doesn't want the public to know about. And I'll be like, oh, yeah, that's good. That's a good thing for me to introduce today. So it's really it's an attempt to make him laugh or just to throw him off, because he's a stickler about being accurate and right on. And so to throw Jerem off and lighten the mood right off the top of the show, generally it's just something really dumb. And when he laughs, then I feel like I win.
Yes, we all win when he laughs, actually. So tell me, you know, you guys have been on the air for about a year. I've talked to Jerem a little bit about this on the podcast, but I'm curious from your perspective, when you started doing this a year ago, has it hit what you thought the success would be, exceeded what you thought it would be?
You know, we were kind of pioneers under our senior coordinating producer, Michael Miner. And so I'm not really sure what we were expecting, other than SiriusXM was asking us to do a sports specific show on BYU radio. And the powers that be at BYU TV wanted it to be eventually like Mike and Mike, but the radio show was just kind of a test run, like, okay, let's see how this goes. And Jerem and Spencer are pretty good buddies, and they have some chemistry. And so I think we were optimistic, but to be where we are now a year later, and to have the traction that we have and people buying into the BYU Sports Nation Karma and the Countdown to Connecticut. And I mean, there are so many organic things that have developed on this show that have just taken off. And so we feel really fortunate and blessed to have the kind of following that we do. And so I would say that the expectations have been surpassed, at least in my mind, of what this show was going to become in such a short amount of time. And we're personality driven, so we're unique that way. We're obviously a little bit younger than everybody else that is a media voice on BYU, and so we relate to a different listenership or a different demographic. And we like it. We like that we found this niche and the way that it's grown. And so I would say that it's exceeded my expectations, at least to this point. So hopefully we don't disappoint and start trending downward after this.
Well, I'll tell you, I think the chemistry that you mentioned is the key. I mean, my brother and I, you know, have been doing our podcast for about 4 years, and I think it was very easy to have chemistry because, I mean, we've known each other for 30 some odd years and not liked each other for just as long. So it's easy to have that kind of chemistry. But I think that's really what makes you set you guys apart from some other shows. Moving on to something that's maybe even more exciting even than your show, Spencer.
What? Is there something more exciting than that?
There is. And only one thing, and that's Taysom Hill hurdling Texas defenders. But we're going to get to the whole game here in a second. But I wanted to start out with something that now, you were not at that game, correct? You were in studio in Provo, correct?
Correct. I was hosting Countdown to Kickoff and the post game.
Yes. So Andre Hutchins on Twitter, that's @AC_Hutchins, said, "My Austin experience was incredible. Tailgating was indescribable." And I would echo when I've twice been to Notre Dame, had the same experience. The tailgating at Notre Dame was quite awesome, as well as at Wisconsin when we went to that last year. But he says, how can BYU improve game day experience? So Spencer, from your perspective, what can the administration do and the athletic department to maybe create an atmosphere more akin to Austin, Madison, or Notre Dame?
Well, I happen to know that BYU Sports Marketing as a team are making it a point to better it because it's kind of so sporadic around BYU. And so they are designating a specific lot across from the BYU Broadcasting Building and the Marriott Center as the tailgating lot. So it won't be, hey, just go tailgate wherever you want. They want to bring all of the tailgaters together and put them in a unique area so that people know, hey, if we want to go hang out and party before the game, and I say party, you know, with a conservative overtone.
The Mormon version.
Root beer, and, you know, you might hear a few shoots and darns.
Yep.
But they want to put everybody in the same lot, whereas it's been so spread out before. And so David Almodova, the head of BYU Sports Marketing, has championed this. He's the guy that came over from the university, Duke University, and he's been around the Cameron crazies, and he's seen those guys camp out for, you know, nights on end to get basketball tickets or to get on the front row. And he wanted to implement some of that at BYU. And that's why you're having, you know, campaigns where we have the wide out and different t-shirt giveaways and then the whole royal out. And now this whole tailgating experience that he wants to bring the BYU community together when they're in town in Provo. He just wants everyone to be in close capacity. And so I'm on board with him. I trust a guy that's been at Duke that understands, you know, crazy passionate fans. The Cameron crazies are about as nutso as they come. And he is seeking to implement that, but it's going to take probably 4 or 5 years before it totally catches on. Let's be honest, BYU's fan base is super unique. Its demographic stretches from ages 3 to 103. It just does. People are loyal from very young until their dying day. And with the Mormon culture playing in and alcohol not being involved, sometimes people are a little hesitant to get involved in that. But we're working with BYU Sports Marketing and those guys to promote a culture of, hey, we can still have fun and go nuts and be in, you know, close together and do it the right way. And so that's the best answer I can give you is it's understood. they know it's an issue and they want to fix it, and they're taking, you know, some big measures to make that happen.
Well, and, you know, it's before the game, so you still, fans can still leave in the fourth quarter to beat traffic if they need to. You know, it's not going to interrupt with that. So,
oh, you've noticed that before?
Yeah. Well, I grew up going to the games as a kid, and then, of course, as a student, I remember that. But I remember as a student, the only people that tailgated were the Polynesian families.
Yeah,
that was it.
Yeah.
That was, I mean, you'd walk to the stadium, until I got out of Provo and got on some other campuses at football games, I didn't realize how big of a deal that has been for a long time, right? I mean, it's not like at Notre Dame they started doing that 5 years ago. They've been doing that for a long time. So
yeah, and they're trying to implement more traditions, the Cougar Walk,
and
you know, the whole Rock and the Royal Cougar Student Section and stuff. And so they're making efforts and attempts, and it's getting better. It's just not a switch that you can flip and everything gets better. So it'll take some time, but the effort is being put in.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's changing for the better. So let's switch to the game, Spencer. If I had told you a week ago today that BYU was going to beat Texas 41-7, what would you have done to me? I mean, committed me? Would you have just thrown the blue goggles on me? I mean, how far out of your expectations, did this game end up?
Absolutely, I would have thrown the blue goggles on you. I'm an optimist, and I get that. I try and say that I have a cautious optimism, and Jerem is more of what he proclaims himself to be, the realist. But if you said 41-7, I'd have been like, okay, I need to put the blue goggles on first. Okay, now I'm starting to see your logic. I said 27-14. That's what I thought the game would be. I really felt Texas's offense would struggle under Swoops, the new quarterback, and the pressure and the limelight, and the BYU's defense is up to the task. But Taysom was good enough to get around that Texas defense. And so I said a 13-point victory with the defense performing well, 41-7. I mean, in the third quarter, when BYU went up 34-0, I looked at Brian Logan and David Nixon, and I said, can we just step back and take a look at what is actually happening? This is the same Texas team that had this game circled on their calendar for an entire year, telling themselves, man, we're going to teach BYU a lesson when they come to Austin. They can't disrespect us that way. They thought about it for a year, and then it was worse. And so, yeah, I am super ecstatic for the guys and for Bronco Mendenhall. I've never seen him smile bigger in my life. But I never would have anticipated 41-7. I knew they were good, and I knew Taysom was good. But when you go into, I don't care if it's a mediocre Texas team or even a bad Texas team, you're still playing in Austin in one of the college football meccas. That is not supposed to happen to that team, and BYU absolutely hammered Texas.
Yeah. I don't know anybody anticipated what happened. Now, I think the narrative is starting to come out, Spencer, that, and actually my dad texted me earlier today to say, why is everyone getting so excited? Texas is terrible. You said on your show today you called them mediocre, which I wouldn't disagree with. I actually think that's probably an apt description. But the question is, now the narrative's like, well, maybe BYU's not that good. They beat Connecticut, who's terrible. They beat Texas, who's mediocre. And I think got shaken up by that long touchdown run that got called back. And I think Jerem said that on your show this morning as well. Is that really the narrative, or is it somewhere in between, or are we just being pessimistic BYU fans if we're saying, well, 2-0, that's great and all, but I mean, Texas isn't any good this year, and they had a sophomore quarterback.
Well, we still had to beat Texas's defense, and Joe Schad of ESPN on Countdown to Kickoff, our pregame show on BYU TV, could not stop talking about how bent on revenge Texas was. And even though Swoops is a new guy and he's getting his first start, that the Texas defense is experienced. They've got guys like Quandre Diggs and Jordan Hicks and Cedric Reed. These guys are going to play in the NFL. They're going to be early round draft picks, and they're playing on their home field, and they remember what happened in Provo. And so all of these ESPN guys, Kirk Herbstreit, for crying out loud, picked Texas to beat BYU on game day. So did Lee Corso, although Mr. Corso's getting a little aged himself. But when Kirk Herbstreit says, you know, I'm going to Texas. Not many people are giving them a chance, and I think they're angry. Okay, BYU put up 41 points against that defense that Joe Shad said was, I believe the quote was, so experienced and good and motivated, end quote. And so as bad as Texas might have been on offense or as inexperienced, the BYU offense still had to score on a defense that has been touted as one of the best in the Big 12. Well, I guess we'll find out. The verdict is still out on Texas. They play UCLA this weekend, who I think is the most overrated team in America, by the way. Struggled against Memphis, had a hard time on the road against Virginia. They're 2-0. And I wouldn't be surprised to see Texas go into a little bit of a dogfight with UCLA. So let's not throw out the verdict on, or make a final verdict on Texas just yet. Let's see them play against UCLA and some Big 12 teams, see what happens. Because last year people said Texas is horrible too after they lost to BYU, and they went 7-2 after that and took second in the Big 12 for crying out loud. Yeah. So it's so early. I say they were mediocre. They might be mediocre right now, but let's not say that they can't get any better or that BYU is just not a really good team.
Yeah,
we don't know.
And we don't want to – I don't want to oversell Ash either as a quarterback, because he's not exactly – he wasn't contending for the Heisman when he got hurt. You know, he's a good quarterback, but he's not great, so – I don't know that his presence would have made much of a difference in this particular game. So looking forward to Houston, I know, you know, there's that old sports cliche that looking past your opponent. Do you think on a scale of 1 to 100, what are the chances that BYU's team in the euphoria of beating Texas is looking past the Houston Cougars?
That's a fair question. And, you know, I talked to a couple of players today, and I posed that question just in passing and said, how are you feeling? You know, it's great to come home from Texas with a win, but, you know, how are you going to get ready for Houston and kind of get back to reality? And they told me, the coach and I said, okay, this is a great memory. I want you to go home. I want you to write about it in your journals, and I want you to slam that journal shut, and you can read it after you graduate, because we are in a one-game season right now. They want to win every game. They know that to be relevant, they have to win every game. And so while they're happy about Texas, it doesn't matter if they lose to Houston. And that is what they were telling me. You know, it was cool, and it was fun, and it was epic, but if we lose to Houston, it's all for naught. And so I buy into that mentality. I trust it. I don't think they're going to overlook anybody. Maybe they'll overlook Savannah State a little bit. I don't know. But
right.
Other than that, I don't see BYU intentionally overlooking any team because they think, oh, they can't play with us. They remember what Houston did last year. They know that John O'Korn is back. Their quarterback, who was a freshman last year, lit him up. That Deontay Greenberry is back, who's averaging over 100 yards of receiving. And so while it's the classic trap game, and the scariest stat of all is that Bronco Mendenhall in his era is 1-8 in game 3 of the season. One win back in 2008 and 8 losses in game number 3.
Really? I wouldn't even.
Yeah.
I guess if I start thinking about it, I might have thought of that, but wow.
Yeah, lost to TCU, lost to Boston College, 2 losses to Florida State, 3 losses to Utah, and then 1 win against UCLA. And a loss to Tulsa, like 55-47 in the Max Hall and Austin Collie years. So it's been this weird game. I don't really think that they're aware of that. But this team is not like those other teams. I've been saying for a long time, there's just this special feel about this team. They have a lot of components. They opened up their recruiting parameters. They went out and got speed, and they got JUCO guys, and then they got the graduate transfers. BYU has never done this before. I've had long conversations with Bronco Mendenhall about this, and he said, you know, I'm not so sure that it's going to pay off. I hope it does. But there is some risk involved because they're opening up the recruiting again for the first time in a very long time. And so far, it's looking pretty good. And so I think they're motivated, they're focused. I don't see any way they overlook Houston, given what happened last year against that team down there in a one-point barn burner of a win, and it being the home opener and people amped up. And so I, you know, BYU is an 18.5-point favorite, and I wouldn't be surprised at all to see them cover that.
Yeah, that makes sense. Going back to the Texas game, was there any player's performance that you think is just not being talked about? Because there's so many great performances, obviously Taysom, obviously a few defensive players who stood out statistically. Was there anybody you thought that you were a little surprised at how well they played that you think is that's a good sign for this team going forward?
There are some guys on the defensive line that get no credit that are doing work up front, that are channeling everything they need to, that are filling gaps. Graham Rolle, Travis Tuiloma, and Remington Peck are doing an outstanding job on the defensive line, as well as Marcus Johnson. Those guys go to war. And while they don't show up huge in the statistical categories, you talk to the coaches. I talked to Steve Cafusi, the defensive line coach. I talked to Paul Tidwell, the linebackers coach, and they will tell you, those guys are making it easy for our linebackers to make plays. And so I would give huge props to the defensive line and the performance they've had against Connecticut and now Texas. And if there's one guy that I feel like deserves a lot of credit that might not be getting much notoriety, it's Dallin Leavitt. Dallin Leavitt is a monster, and he's put on like 15 or 20 pounds of muscle. He is a gamer. He's, you know, half crazy. He's got that mentality that Jordan Pendleton had a few years ago where he's like, he's got a few screws loose up there, but he's just a physical football player. And so I think Dallin Leavitt is a player that deserves some credit, certainly, that you might not hear his name a whole lot.
All right. Well, we'll get you out on one more question, Spencer. We had a tweet bag question from Alan Seawright. That's at Alan Seawright on Twitter. He says, during the post game after Texas, was Brian Logan's face broken? It was stuck in that grin. And I did watch some of the post game as well. Everybody was grinning, right? I mean, everybody was, because all of you, besides being covering the team, you're all fans, right? So, and Brian obviously played football for BYU. So, I mean, what was it like on the set with everybody's face lit up like that?
Brian was giddy, no doubt. And he wears his emotions on his sleeve. So, you know, what do you do with a guy like that except just kind of smile and shrug and tease him a little bit? But I wish everyone could have seen Brian Logan's reaction when Taysom Hill had the hurdle and went in for a touchdown. He was sprinting up and down the halls continuing broadcasting so fast. David Nixon and I just sat there and cracked up. It was really exciting, but I don't think I've ever seen anybody get that excited about a play. And so, you know, for Brian to be smiling, whatever, yeah, he admits it. If there's a guy that wears blue goggles, it's Brian Logan. he is the blue goggle man, but you got to love him because he's true to the Cougars. And so the smile on his face, yeah, it was just kind of a happy, giddy time. And I think a surreal experience for most Cougar fans because they, of course, you want to win, but it's just the way they won. The way they won in such a dominating fashion after what arguably might be the best single quarter of football that BYU has ever experienced as an offense. I mean, it was euphoric there in Studio A for sure.
Yeah, there's no doubt. It was euphoric in my basement as well as we were busy waking up my sleeping children as we were screaming about Taysom Hill going over a guy. And my wife came down the stairs to ask what happened. I couldn't even articulate it. I was just like, well,
yeah,
Taysom.
Just watch the TV.
Yeah, there's Taysom and there's a guy and then it's a touchdown. And she's just like, yeah, it's great, Adam. I'll go back upstairs now. So anyway, well, Spencer, thanks for coming on the show. We'd encourage everybody to check out BYU Sports Nation, available basically in like 8 different formats, I think. I'm not even sure if that's true.
Yeah, you have no excuses. You have no excuses not to listen to this podcast, and you have no excuses not to listen to BYU Sports Nation.
That's right. It's 2013, 14. What year are we in? 2014.
Yeah, we're 2014.
If you can't figure out a podcast, I don't know how to help you anymore. It's not that complicated. And certainly not complicated. And daily, what's the time on? It's 11 a.m. Mountain. Is that right?
It's 10 a.m. Mountain, noon Eastern. And, I did want to offer this before I get off.
You bet.
The podcast with you. And that is my. I just thought about my favorite introduction to Jerem ever, and that was the legal guardian of Cosmo the Cougar. I don't know if I've ever come up with a better one than that. Maybe I have. I don't know. But that's always been my favorite.
Well, my favorite has been when you said he was the, I'm going to get the phrasing wrong and you can correct me, but the biggest fan of Marvel movies or Marvel movie expert.
Self-proclaimed Marvel movie expert.
Yes, that's what
critic.
It was. Yeah. Yes, that's what it was. So next time I have him on, I'm going to, that's going to be our first topic of conversation.
Fantastic.
So I'm going to go toe-to-toe with Mr. Jordan on that one. Well, Spencer, thanks for joining us. It's been great. As I said, check out BYU Sports Nation, and we'll definitely have you on again sometime soon.
You got it. We'll talk to you again soon.
So, Matt, are you still basking in the glow?
I am. I am basking a little bit.
Did you have trouble sleeping on Saturday night?
No, I slept very soundly Saturday night, as a matter of fact.
I had a little trouble. I was, like, too excited. And I had trouble sleeping. But it was a good trouble sleeping, as, you know, as we trounced Texas 41-7. Just like both you and I predicted. I believe
yes.
That is the exact score.
Yes, almost exactly how we predicted.
I predicted 21-20. What was yours again?
28-24.
Well, we both predicted wins. So we were right about something.
I also predicted a big game for Leslie.
He did have a big game.
So I would just want to throw that out there.
That block that wasn't a hold. I watched that replay like 8 times. There was no holding on that play.
No, it's a classic move by a beat defender is you grab the blocker and you pull him down on top of you and it looks like he tackled you.
Yes, it's terrible. It was a terrible call. But anyway, we'll get to that in a second, Matt. Before we get to that, because it's going to come back and it's all going to be interrelated, looking at the college football landscape as it exists today, now that we're 2 weeks in, who are your 4 playoff teams?
Oh, who are my 4 playoff teams now, huh?
Yes, who are your 4 playoff teams now?
Well, you know, And I don't remember who we talked about earlier, but I think Florida State and Alabama are still in the mix.
Both of us talked about them being in there.
I think that I had Ohio State in there.
I did not, if I remember right. I had Oregon.
Yeah, I may have had Oregon, but Ohio State was obviously a miss.
Okay.
If that is who I said, but I don't remember.
What are you talking about, Ohio State? I hear they're really good.
Yeah, not going to work out this time. I don't know. Did Urban Meyer announce his retirement yet?
hey, they beat Navy.
I lost the game. I need to
spend time with my family. You know, come on. They beat Navy. You can't take that away from them.
No, you can't. You can't ever take that away from them unless they get sanctioned by the NCAA somehow, in which case you can take it away from them.
Well, that's kind of inevitable, isn't it? It's both Ohio State and Urban Meyer together, so sanctions are coming.
Something is going on.
Let's be honest. There's no jokes about that. I'll tell you who I am most impressed with. Okay.
Who is that?
The teams I'm most impressed with are Oregon, and this is in order. My top 4. Okay. Oregon, absolutely. Georgia, though, they've only played 1 game. Okay, but I think Georgia's awesome, looks awesome. Notre Dame. I know Michigan's not great, but rolling in, even though it was a home game, beating Michigan 31-0. And they'll get a chance, right? Notre Dame will get a chance. They play Stanford, they play Florida State, they play USC. They'll get a chance. If they run the table with their schedule, they're in. Right? They are a top 4 team. They will put Notre Dame in the playoff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So those are my top 3, and I'm going to have to say A&M as my 4th team. I think there will be 2 SEC teams, and it may not be the 2 I even talked about. You know what I mean? It might be Auburn and Alabama. I don't know. But I think this year it's 2 SEC teams. And by the way, notice that I'm not saying BYU is going to make the playoffs.
What about a USC team that runs the table?
Oh, any that's the wild card here with the Pac-12. I think the Pac-12 is so loaded this year that you may end up seeing none of them get there because they beat up on each other too much. If USC runs the table, then they're in, right? I mean, they'll have beaten
Arizona State.
I mean, they already
UCLA,
got Stanford,
Notre Dame,
UCLA, Notre Dame, and then likely Oregon in the championship, right?
Right.
If they run the table, if any Pac-12 team runs the table, they're in easy. I don't think any of them will. I just think it's too hard. It's the same with the SEC. If somebody runs the table in the SEC, they're in. But I don't think in the SEC you have to run the table. As good as the conference, as those two conferences are, if you're Florida State, though, you've got to run the table to guarantee it. You still may get in with one, but to guarantee it. And if you're in the Big 12, if you're Oklahoma, you have to run the table. One loss and a conference championship, and you're going to be sitting on the outside watching that those final two games.
I'll tell you what, I think we have a much better idea of who Florida State is after this weekend.
Yes, agreed. Agreed. You know, beating up on Oklahoma State in the Citadel, and actually they didn't beat up on Oklahoma State.
I guess it's not this weekend, but they've got some
2 weeks,
off.
2 weeks,
they don't play
yeah,
till
yeah.
the 20th, right?
A Clemson, but again, I don't know how good Clemson is. I think they're good, but you know, they got beat by Georgia, who of course is awesome. So again, I don't know if I don't know how good they are, but that Notre Dame game with Florida State, that is, circle your calendars Saturday, October 18th. You know what
it's
I mean?
It's going to be a good one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's... I love the playoff, Matt. Look at this. Like, it used to be like week two. I don't care about any of this. I don't care about ratings or rankings or any of that because, you know, it didn't matter. And in the end, it's only the top two teams going and, you know, and then some bowls. I am stoked. I can't wait till they make it eight teams. which will happen eventually. Do you agree with that?
Oh, yeah, that's inevitable.
Now that they've tasted the playoff goodness, they can't walk away. They can't walk away. Well, Matt, before we get on to football, I did want to say one basketball note, okay? And that is simply Tyler Hawes is awesome.
Tyler Hawes is awesome.
Tyler Hawes is cool because he's part of a team. Yeah, see how that works? Works well. But seriously, he was named as... by Lindy's, I believe, is the top shooting guard in the nation.
No big deal. I mean, it's the top shooting guard in the nation. I mean, come on.
And I mean, I can't really disagree with them with my blue glasses on.
No, nope, absolutely not.
So anyway, Tyler Hawes is awesome. And as the season gets closer, we'll talk more about his awesomeness.
And there will be plenty of awesomeness to discuss.
Yes. Okay. So, Matt, but what everybody wants to hear us talk about, or at least a dozen people or so, is just how awesome the BYU football team was in Austin Saturday night. So, man, who were the most... Now, Taysom Hill aside, we're going to talk about him in a second. Outside of Taysom Hill, you've got two MVP trophies to hand to folks. They could be two defenders, two offensive guys, special team, whoever you want. You got two trophies to hand out. Who are you handing them to?
Oh, that's tough. I think one goes to Jamal Williams.
Okay. Jamal Williams, good call.
I'm not sure what I want to do with the other one.
Basically, you're indecisive.
Can I give it to the defense?
You can give it to them as a group, sure.
The defense as a group.
We're making this up.
No, because when I look at some of the things you want that stick out for a defense, right? You're looking for sacks, you're looking for tackles, you're looking for people who made big plays. And as I look at the stats here and you see tackle for a loss, you have three, four, you have six different people with tackles for a loss. Two different people with fumble recoveries, an interception, three sacks among three different players.
Yeah.
You've got five different players who had five or more tackles. So I think when you look at that type of statistical breakdown, you've got to say that that's a defensive unit playing as a team to really just shut down the Texas offense. Of course, they got a little help from the Texas offense, But you still, I mean, you've got to feel pretty good about their performance.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I'd hand my two trophies to the aforementioned Jordan Leslie. 7 catches for 85 yards. No touchdowns because Taysom and Adam Hine decided they're the only ones scoring touchdowns. All right? So you just back up. But Leslie's blocking that our comments about his hold that wasn't a hold aside, he is one of the best wide receiver blocking wide receivers I think we've ever had. And we're two games in. He, against UConn, and again, I was like, against UConn, I was like, okay, he's pancaking these, you know, basically, you know, 2-star, 3-star guys, right? So what? But he does the exact same thing against much better players. And I'm just sitting there going, you know, let's running outside now. And those plays where, oh, great, the wide receiver whiffed on the block and it's a 3-yard loss. That's not happening on Leslie's side.
No. I think we're going to get to a point where defensive backs are going to legitimately be worried that he's going to lay them out.
Oh, I mean, he has done an excellent job. And obviously, the 7 catches he showed on that one play about his great hands, I don't even know how he caught it. But Matt, my second one is going to go to a defensive player, and that's Dallin Leavitt. 7 tackles, including 2 for loss, a sack, and just basically wreaking havoc all over the place. When they decided to install Leavitt the cat, right? Am I getting the terminology right? Mm-hmm. In Sorensen's place, instead of switching Bills and putting Leavitt or somebody else as the free safety, that is, I thought at the time, okay, well, we'll see how that works out. Coaching genius. Right? And honorable mentions to Robertson Daniel and Zach Stout on the defense as well, which is great that you gave a trophy to the defense because, I mean, let's be honest, they're giving up, what, 8.5 points a game in 2 games?
Yeah.
Now, they haven't faced a really good offense yet, okay? Those caveats, of course, need to be put in place. But they've shut down the 2 mediocre offenses they have faced.
Yeah, and that takes some real talent to do that, even when you are facing a terrible offense.
I mean, 15 first downs, Texas. 15 of them. 3 of 15 on third downs.
That is a huge stat to me.
Less than 258 total yards. Now, Matt, let's go to the stats, shall we?
We shall.
You know what the stats tell me? They had 66 total plays, Texas did. They averaged less than 4 yards per offensive play. That is amazing. We have done that to other teams in the past couple years, and their names include Idaho State and New Mexico State. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Those are the kind of stats that those teams put up against us. And whatever you think of Texas' current state, they are not Idaho State or New Mexico State, right?
I would think they could beat those teams this in 2024.
Yes, and soundly. But our defense is better than, at least is playing better than I thought that they were going to play.
And do you know who I would just real quick give an honorable mention to is the offensive line.
Yes. Though they did give up 6 sacks.
Yeah, okay. But I finally saw a little bit of a mean streak. I think we're seeing them moving in a decent direction. They're still playing around with personnel a little bit there.
Yep.
And I think that's where you see some of the sacks and these other things come into play. But as they get that combination right, I think this is going to be a pretty good unit.
Yeah, yeah. So Matt, let's talk about Taysom Hill. On a scale of 1 to 100, how awesome was him hurdling that Texas defender?
500.
A million, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's like the coolest.
Did
it was an unbelievable, and he saw it developing from 30 yards away.
Yes, and he knew that, and he said in the post game, he knew that they were coming at his knees and ankles all game. Which, by the way, isn't that the way they tried to tackle him last year that didn't work?
Yep.
The knees and ankles. Like, if you're going to take him down, it is not going to be grabbing his ankle.
I don't understand why nobody teaches wrapping up anymore.
Well, I just...
Like a good form tackle in open space there, that's what you need to do.
If that guy maintains his feet, right, he does one of two things. He either tackles Taysom or he slows him down and the guys from behind can get him, right? But by diving, he gives... And Hill didn't have to hurdle him. He could have just done... You know, he could have just cut to the right, you know? There were several ways he could have avoided that tackle. Now, as...
And there's part of me that believes that Hill might have been able to just run through it.
That is highly likely, actually, based on his later touchdown when he basically took on linebackers and made them look like small children. So Taysom Hill, we're all, like, excited about this. He's showing up on Heisman watch lists now basically everywhere, right? Everybody's got him in their Heisman top 10. How good is he? I mean, is this now realistic? A week ago, we were saying he's not going to win the Heisman. He has 0% chance. Pie in the sky, we go undefeated. Is there any chance if we go undefeated, he's not in New York for the ceremony?
I think if we go undefeated, he's likely in New York for the ceremony. I still don't know if I feel like he can win it.
I think it'll be hard to win it, but I agree. I think if we go undefeated, which that's a big if, by the way, and we'll get to that later.
Yeah, we're putting the cart like
100
yards before the horse here.
Yes. So did anything worry you about this Texas game? Did anything where you said, we probably shouldn't do that going forward?
I didn't see a whole lot, and in the first half I felt like we were still kind of feeling things out and trying to figure out what to do, and what kind of adjustments we need to make. We kicked some field goals, went through the uprights, hit all the extra points, and those are things that were the big question marks, in my opinion, coming into this game. So I don't think this revealed too much weakness. I'm sure there's things out there, but I don't know that I saw anything expressly in this game that's keeping me up at night.
The only thing that's keeping me up at night, and not literally, by the way, is the passing game was just okay. You know, he completed 67% of his passes, yes, but the yards per pass attempt was a lot lower, and then the 6 sacks. So total, if you factor in the sacks with the 27 pass attempts, you're looking at less than 4.5 yards per play, which is way below average, right? Now, we make up for it in the fact that defense was awesome. And if you took out, if you just look at the third quarter and the passing, we were getting big plays and lighting him up and stuff. I'm a little worried against an elite pass defense that we're going to become one-dimensional. Now, do we face an elite pass defense the rest of the year? Maybe not.
Right.
So it may not be a big issue. And on the defensive side of the ball, quite frankly, nothing is keeping me up. I think this defense, the sky is the limit. I think they're being coached well. I think they're athletic. I think they're fast. They are better through two games than I thought they were going to be.
I would agree with that.
End of story, end of discussion, Matt. So let's talk about Houston quickly. We'll switch on to Houston. They're not any good.
No.
I don't know what happened to them, but that game against UT San Antonio, who may be okay based on how they've played this year.
Come on.
I'm trying to, we're 18.5 point favorites, man. I'm trying to keep this interesting. Okay, 0 to 100, 100 being extremely concerned, 0 not concerned at all. How concerned are you at the euphoria of this victory distracting the players and them not being prepared to play on Thursday night?
30.
Yeah, I'm about the same.
But I really like the coaching staff right now, and it looks like they're doing the right things. I mean, I've talked a lot about this killer instinct, and everybody's talked about making second half adjustments, and I felt like I saw both those things out of what they were coaching last weekend. So that makes me think that they're dialed in, the players are dialed in, everybody's bought into the system, and the coaches are going to make that a point of emphasis this week and not allow the players to become distracted with all the hype or become distracted with the big win and come in here to take care of business in the short week.
Yeah, yeah. So they are, Houston has not played well so far. I mean, they beat Grambling 47-0, but even in that game, the offense didn't look spectacular. Certainly not Okorn passing the ball. He's completing 52% of his passes this year, Matt.
Yeah, and keep in mind that if you look at the two different games, he was like 48%, high 40s against UTSA and then high 50s against Grambling.
Yeah.
When you look at, like, when you slice up the competition he's facing here, I mean, it is not a good situation statistically.
So, Matt, let's get straight to it then. Over under 350 total yards for Taysom Hill.
Over.
I agree with you. Though I don't think it'll be a lot because I think we're going to be winning. I think Christian Stewart will actually get his most playing time that he's gotten. Over under 100 yards rushing for Jamal Williams.
Over.
I'm going to agree with you. Over under unsportsmanlike penalties against Fua for some type of gesture. And I'll set it at 0.5.
I'm going to go with the under. I think he's going to reel that in.
I see what you did there. I was waiting for the horns downward gesture.
Oh, I can't believe nobody did it.
I think I wouldn't be surprised if there had been specific instructions to leave that kind of stuff alone.
Yeah.
So, Matt, over under for Houston, 10.5 points.
Under.
I'm also going to go under. So, Matt, let's get straight to the final prediction. Your prediction game score for the Houston game in Provo on Thursday night.
31-3, BYU.
31-3. That's nice. I like it. I like it. I'm going to say 40-10.
Oh, look at you, fancy pants.
I don't think their defense can stop us at all. They couldn't last year. And I think the offense is better now than it was the last time we played Houston and we put up 50. Now, we're not going to put up 50-something because we're not going to need to. With the defensive backs we have, they're not going to be able to do what they did last year. They just won't, I don't think.
No.
So 18.5-point favorites. We're both taking the over on that, Matt. What percent chance do you give 0 to 100 Houston in – just making this a game, not upset, but where this is close, 60%. Okay,
yeah, so. I don't know because I think they have it in them. I mean, it's the same quarterback.
Yes, it is.
You know, he doesn't have the right pieces around him. They've clearly started slow to the season.
Oh yes.
Nobody really. I don't know that we were all expecting the type of shootout that we got last year either.
No. So, we were. We thought we'd win comfortably.
Yeah, so I think that there's a chance here that they kind of turn this thing around and the light comes on and they come out here and get into this game and keep it close. I mean, but when I say keep it close, I mean maybe inside of two scores.
Yeah. Well, let's go to the tweet bag, man.
Tweet bag.
So we have an actual email from Matt Quinney to look at, okay?
Wow. Did you go out to the email box to get it?
Yeah, I actually had to access my email box. First part of his question, he's got four parts of his question. He's very wordy this week. He predicted,
which is why he didn't tweet this question.
That's right. Not 140 characters.
This used to be regular fare, if I remember correctly.
What, that we used to get emails?
No, that he would choose to email these instead of tweeting them because they were very verbose.
I believe that's true. And this, by the way, that's at Matt_Quinney on Twitter, though, of course, he didn't tweet this at us.
We're not going to give out his email address because that would just be weird.
I should give out his email address. That is, no, I'm just kidding, Matt.
Yeah, that would
that would be inappropriate.
Yeah.
So why
not that not we really that? Worry about being inappropriate.
Anyway, he said he predicted 11-point win. Did you hear anyone predicting more than 11 points? I didn't. Everybody was close that I heard, even though people were picking BYU.
Well, what was interesting to me is right before the game on the countdown to kickoff on BYU TV, those guys all started picking for a big BYU win.
Really? I didn't. There was a little bit of run of it there. Countdown to kickoff. So,
There was a run there where several of them were saying, I think BYU is going to win this game big.
Yeah, there you go. There you have it.
They spent the whole day like getting each other psyched up about the game, so I think sometimes that happens.
That does happen. Greg Rebell tweeted that BYU is 36-3 in the Mendenhall era when the team rushes for 200 yards or more. The only three losses being Utah in 08, Air Force in 2010, and Notre Dame last year. Is this the best metric now for the success of this program?
With the new offense, it may be.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, we are a rushing team, not a passing team, right? That is just we will win or die based on how well that run game goes. And Matt, any chance you can sneak in a Boston Batman reference again?
I'll see what I can do.
All right. We'll save that for later. Also in the tweet bag, I think we had something else. Did we not have anything else? So we'll start it off what we're about to do with a tweet from Andre Hutchins. That's at @AC_Hutchins. He actually directed this at Spencer, but we ran out of time, and quite frankly, you and I can handle this.
Wow.
Now that Utah is...
We got this.
Yes, now that Utah is not on the schedule, should Cougs fans be optimistic about every game left on the schedule? So, Matt, it's time for our favorite game, which is wild predictions about the rest of the season, game by game.
Hold on. Before we do that, can I clarify this question?
Sure.
This question it seems to say that if Utah were on the schedule, that would create some type of unease for me.
Well, it clearly would.
I don't
for
know
Andre.
That it would for 2014.
No, it wouldn't. I wouldn't be worried about them at all. We'd steamroll them. Easy to say because we're not playing them, but I'm serious. Okay, Matt. So let's go through the rest of the schedule. Virginia, 0 to 100 chances of BYU winning.
80%.
I'm with you. Utah State, again in Provo.
79%.
I'm going higher. They're not any good this year.
Yeah, I feel pretty good about that.
At Central Florida.
I don't know where to land with this game. This game still makes me a little nervous. So I'm going to, I'm just going to say 50 here and play it safe because that way I'm right either way.
I'm going to say 51 just to one up you a little bit. We don't know how good this team is yet because they only played one game in freaking Ireland.
Yeah.
You know what? So it's judging them. We'll know a lot. They play Missouri this weekend, right? This Saturday?
Mm-hmm.
They play Missouri. So we'll have an idea at this point if they're any good or not, or at least a better idea. Saturday, October 18th, Nevada back in Provo, 95%, right?
Yeah.
At Boise State, which is one I used to be worried about, Matt, but I'm not as worried about anymore.
Worry no more, my friend.
Hey, they beat Colorado State. What would you give them? 0 to 100. Chance BYU wins that game.
Chance BYU wins that game, 85%.
I'm going to go a little lower, 70-75. It's still the Smurf turf. At Middle Tennessee, 80-90.
100%.
100%. Provo, UNLV, 100%. Provo, yep. Savannah State, 105%, if that's possible.
Yeah.
At California in Berkeley, 0 to 100% chance that I make some snide remarks up to that week about that university.
The band is on the field.
100%. Percent chance that we win. BYU wins. You and I will not be playing.
That one's still, I don't know. I'm still a little bit nervous about that one. I feel like the jury is still out for me on Cal.
Yes, I agree.
And that's a tough game on the road.
They beat Northwestern on the road, but it turns out Northwestern's probably
isn't
not any good.
Very good.
So they beat Sacramento State big, which they should, right? But, I don't know. Quite frankly, we probably won't know exactly. If they lose to some of the middling Pac-12 teams they play in September and October, maybe we do find out. But once they get to that UCLA-Oregon stretch, we'll really know.
Holy smokes. And you know what?
But
that may be really working in our favor. Look at the second half of their schedule. UCLA, Oregon, then at Oregon State, at USC, and then Stanford at home. You tell me that it was the sixth game, and after that stretch, that they don't come into that game, pretty beat up and bruised, egos broken.
And our five games before that matter: Boise State, Middle Tennessee, UNLV, and Savannah.
It's like we have a warm up and they run a gauntlet.
Yeah, so I would say like 65% we win, because I still don't think they're great. Matt, how many losses does BYU have when the bowl season begins?
One.
I agree with you. I don't think we're going undefeated. One of these games, is it UCF? Is it Boise? Is it Cal? Boy, if it's Cal, that's really depressing. But I think it's Florida, Central Florida or Boise State. I think those are the two games. I don't think Virginia, we both, did we do Virginia? Yeah, we did. You said like 85, right?
Yeah, I said 85. I'm not worried about Virginia.
So I'm not either.
Utah State could be a weird one.
Utah State could be a weird one. There's the rivalry things, and Chucky plays very well against us typically. But I don't think they're any good.
But we've got a stretch of three games that would be just catastrophic if we lost. Middle Tennessee, UNLV, and Savannah State. Those would be shocks.
There would be massive upsets.
Yes.
Somebody's
hurt.
Like McNeese State beating Nebraska. That almost happened.
Yikes. Or like College Game Day going to Fargo twice in the same season.
Yes. Yes.
It'd be just weird stuff.
Weird and wild stuff. So Matt, we're both predicting one loss. So neither of us we're not saying they're going to be in the playoff. Percent chance 0 to 100 that they make the college football playoff.
Zero, because I think even if they go undefeated, they're not going to go. You and I were talking about this before. Yeah, it's not going to be enough. You look at what else is happening in the college football landscape. I just don't think we've got the chops this year to get in there schedule-wise.
If it was an 8-team playoff, I'd be much higher on if we went undefeated. I think we'd get a slot, but not 4. Percent chance 0 to 100 we play in one of those bowls. Now, granted, we don't have to. They don't have to do it, right? We are not. If we are, undefeated or one of the top teams in the country, they don't have to do that like they have to do with some of the other conferences. Percent chance if we go undefeated, we're in one of those.
If we go undefeated?
Yes.
If we go undefeated, I feel like we've got a 60% chance.
Yeah, I was going to say 65. It'll be kind of depressing if we did go undefeated, and we're putting the cart way before the horse here. It's two games in. If we did go undefeated, it would be kind of depressing to go to the Miami Beach Bowl, don't you think?
Yeah, it would. And that scares me, right? Because then you show up at the Miami Beach Bowl and you get beat by UConn or something. Yeah. And that's just sad. But the other thing too, if you look at this conversation we're having and all of the excitement around, is this team going to go undefeated? According to ESPN, they've got a better chance of going undefeated than anybody else in the country right now. If this team loses two games, and our father sent me a text asking me this question.
Same text to me.
If this team loses two games, do we feel like this was a failure?
Yes.
At this point?
Yes. Doesn't it have to be? Doesn't it have to be? Look at the schedule. We'll be favored. We, at this point, if Vegas was doing the lines for the rest of the season, we'd be favored in every game we play.
And we'll probably be favored in every game we play until we lose one.
Correct. So if you lose to Central Florida and then to Boise, who are both going to be mediocre teams, but on the road, but neither of them are going to be top 15, top 20 teams, right? Nobody probably on our entire schedule is going to be a top 20 team except, I still think Texas is better than they played on Saturday, but even them, I don't think there's much of a chance they're a top 20 team. I mean, two losses, one loss, that's just football, right? You have an off day.
It's very hard to go undefeated.
Even with a fairly light schedule like ours, it's hard to go undefeated.
But we're going to finish the season without a single ranked team on the schedule.
It's very possible. I mean, there's a lot of season left, but yes, it is highly possible. But But as I say that, Matt, how many one-loss or zero-loss seasons have we had in the entire history of BYU football?
Oh, here we go. I don't remember the number off the top of my head, but we've had this conversation before.
Yes, we have. 96, that's one.
Okay. Mm-hmm. 84.
84, that's two. 83, that's three. 80, that's one. And 79, that's five. I just said one, but meant four. Follow me here.
Now you're just saying numbers.
That's five seasons, okay? Four of those happened before you were conscious. You don't remember 1984, right?
No. Well, I don't remember football in 1984.
Yes, you remember eating dirt or whatever it is you did in 1984. You remember 1996, of course.
Oh, 1996 is the greatest BYU football team of all time.
Oh, that's ridiculous. It's the 1980 team.
Okay. Head-to-head, 96 wins.
No, 80 wins by two touchdowns.
I absolutely disagree.
Well, that's because you're wrong. So looking at that, Matt, I kind of think maybe I'm wrong that two losses is depressing. But right now, the expectations are through the roof. That's just how it is.
A win yeah, it like absolutely
that,
is.
A win like that, and you are on, cloud nine. And right now, Taysom Hill, I mean, people are talking about building a statue to that guy.
But think about how fun this is when you talk about how high the expectations are, and then you put that up against the conversations that we've all had around independence and well, what do these games really mean? And we already know that we're going to the Bo Diddley Bowl or whatever. Think about what the situation we're in right now. Each of these games, the build up and the excitement. This is going to be fun.
This is going to be fun, and we have not finished ranked since 2009, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is a chance for us. Now, I'm not big into rankings, but they mean something, right? To the press. This is a chance for us to set up something special next year, too.
Yeah.
Because next year we have the schedule and a senior quarterback and an more experienced defense, experienced offensive line, almost everybody back on offense. Next year is the schedule where you could make the playoffs. And like 1983 was to 1984, and again, I know we're putting carts way ahead of horses. I mean, we're trampling people because the cart's so far ahead. But like 1983 was for 1984, 84 doesn't happen without 83, right?
That's right.
Without that one lost team, there is no national championship, even if you're undefeated in 84. This is 1983, man. This is it. This is our chance to do something special. And if you're not rooting for that to happen, I don't know what to tell you. You know what I mean? Like, this is it. This is why we root for a team, right? To have a special season.
Yeah, this has we have all the opportunity right now, and it feels like the beginning of a season, right? Is the same way. It's all upside, it's all opportunity, it's all opportunity to do something really special, and to still be there, especially after the Texas game. That's fun. Well, this is why you get into this, right?
And this is even better than preseason, right? Because we lost the Fight Hunger Bowl. Right to Washington. The season ended on a sour note, and you and I were basically saying this is a two or three loss team this year. And now all of a sudden we're saying it's a zero or one loss team. Because now we have more data, right? We've seen this defense that we weren't sure what to make of play. Taysom Hill's even better than he was last year. And we've got a wide receiver core with one guy that's like pile driving defensive backs into the ground. And a healthy Mitch Matthews, out there mocking the height of, 5'7" defensive backs.
That's pretty awesome, by the way. And I just want to go back to Jordan Leslie for just a second, because I think what he's doing, in my opinion, that's a whole attitude shift. That's a whole that is a whole mentality, a team mentality. I mean, you're looking at this guy that may be the best receiver on the team.
At least of as of right now, who's on the team. I think that's probably true.
And he's down there sacrificing his body to make blocks for his quarterback.
Yes.
Or his running back. But
yes.
And, you know, getting in people's faces and doing what he needs to do to help the team win and not worrying about his own stats.
No.
He's not out there shrugging his shoulders because he's not getting the ball thrown his way or afraid to hit somebody because he wants to keep his hands safe or any of this. I mean, he's out there playing football. I love it. I love it.
He's like my new favorite player. I mean, I was already stoked after UConn, though his receiving numbers were low. Just the blocks he was doing, just to me, if we're going to be a rushing football team, which we are, your wide receivers have to be able to do that. Because as we saw in the second quarter, you can't run a dive play every down.
No.
They will sniff that out. Now, I know everyone's saying, oh, trust and I, it worked. It only worked because other things started working later.
That's right. It all has to work together for this offense to work.
Yes.
You know, it's the whole thing about throwing and setting up the run or running to set up the throw, you know, and then the dive to set up the keeper, like all of these things. It all has to kind of develop together. And I think that's what we saw them do
in the third quarter.
Exactly. Yeah. And it drives everybody nuts to watch a nice set stuff up because you're like, why does he keep running the ball up the middle? Stop it. We're not going anywhere. And it drives people crazy. But there is a method to his madness. Now, granted, 3 weeks from now, 4 weeks from now, we're going to lose a game and we're going to be like, oh, Anai's an idiot. What are we doing?
You'll be saying that because you hate Anai.
But right now it's working. And juggling circus catches don't hurt either.
No, juggling circus.
What in the world? How did he come up? How did he come down with that?
I don't know. It was unreal. So, Matt, I'm going to get us out on one last tweet bag question that's a breaking tweet bag just in from the Irish Mexican at Bullishism. Matt, is Taysom Hill the best player of the Bronco Mendenhall era?
Is he the best player of the Bronco Mendenhall era? I'm going to go ahead and say yes, he is.
I'm going to say TBD. Okay.
That wasn't an option. Oh, my cop out.
He didn't give us options.
No, whatever.
I'm taking my own option. Here's the thing. He still has to
write now, this season. If you had to pick one today, given everything you know,
Kyle
right
Vannoy.
Now.
Kyle
Vannoy. Yeah, you may have me there.
Yeah, I'm picking Vannoy. I mean, the guy won the Poinsettia Bowl a couple years ago by himself.
That's right? True. I mean, that was Kyle Vannoy versus San Diego State.
Yes, that was Kyle Vannoy versus San Diego State. Taysom Hill is going that direction, right?
Taysom Hill had just beat Texas twice.
Yes. I'm not, you know, he is definitely in the discussion. I don't think it's a ridiculous question. But he's only got one plus season under his belt. You know, so I couldn't anoint him yet just because of Vannoy did it for 4 years. And he's done it for one plus. But if he keeps playing like this at the end of the year, it's going to be an easy yes, don't you think?
If he does this all year long, yeah, I think you'd be hard-pressed. I mean, obviously, Vannoy stays in that discussion.
Oh, of course.
But that's not a huge group of people. When you
and
think
Riley
about
Nelson,
how,
that's hopefully. Number three.
I think I just threw up a little in my mouth. But when you think about the list of people that would get into that conversation, it's not a huge group of people. And that's not. I don't mean that to say anything disparaging about the level of talent on the program. I just think you're looking at two very freakishly talented people.
Yes. Oh.
You know, there's a couple other that would make their way into this conversation as we went through. And maybe that's a good topic for a future podcast. But – you know, this is a fantastic question, actually. The more that we talk about this, this is a great question. I answered it too quickly. But
yeah, let's put some more thought into that particular question, and we'll talk about it again next week on the podcast. But everybody, thanks for downloading and listening. Hopefully this has matched the awesomeness. Well, of course, it doesn't match the awesomeness of that win. But at least we've come close, man. We've given it our own try. We hurdled people. We intercepted passes as a former running back.
Juggling circus catches.
We've tried to do all of that. So tune in next week. We'll be hopefully talking about another win and then previewing another game. And, of course, Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!
The stars at night are big and bright, deep in the heart of Texas. The prairie sky is wide and high, deep in the heart of Texas. The sage and bloom is like perfume, deep in the heart of Texas. Reminds me of the one I love, deep in the heart of Texas.